Welcome, everyone. I'm Dr. Justin Arner from the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Pat Smith of the Columbia Orthopedic Group in Columbia, Missouri, who is co-director of their Sports Medicine Fellowship Program. Dr. Smith was the senior author of the article titled Satisfactory Clinical Outcome, Complications, and Provisional Results of Meniscal Centralization with Medial Meniscus Root Repair for the Extruded Medial Meniscus at Mean 2-Year Follow-Up, which is in press in the Arthroscopy Journal and is available online. Welcome, Dr. Smith, and thanks so much for joining us.
Welcome, Justin. Appreciate the opportunity to chat this morning about a favorite topic of mine.
Yeah, I'm really excited too. Every time I have the opportunity to run into you, and I always want to know what are the latest thoughts that you and Dr. Critch, who is the other co-author of this great paper, what you guys are doing, because it's a difficult topic, and certainly we have a long way to go, and you guys are leading the charge. So congratulate you on that, and thanks for talking with us. And I wanted to start off with really asking, how did you get interested in this root repair and centralization topic yourself?
Well, this has been a kind of a longstanding interest of mine, and I do want to thank Aaron Critch, whom I worked with extensively on this project, and others. And really, to me, you know, the root repair was kind of this area that was a little bit of a black box and how to do it. We originally published a technique on different suture techniques about 6 years ago to fix the root. And then we got interested in following some of our patients. So Aaron and I decided, hey, the best way to look at this was to combine our data. So we started looking at some results of our standard transtibial root repairs. You know, we felt very good in the operating room upon completion. And then we did some MRI studies and then looked at our outcomes in an MRI, and we saw that we were not really correcting the extrusion. So, you know, I truly believe that the meniscus root, you know, in addition to repair, if we do not correct extrusion, there, you know, several authors have shown the risk of arthritic development with persistent meniscal extrusion. So I feel that we just had not completely solved the problem. And, you know, we know the importance of the root. You know, it's the anchor point for the meniscus to control our contact pressures. And when you know, Lair showed if you tear the root, it's like a total meniscectomy with increased, you know, pressure on the joint surfaces. And this leads to arthritic progression. But I think the key point there is the meniscal extrusion is what really leads to the arthritic progression. So we were trying to figure out, could we do a better job with our root repairs? And we kind of came to the conclusion that centralization might be the answer.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And one thing I think we all kind of worry or wonder about is, do you think the root tears because of the extrusion, or do you think the extrusion happens because of the root tear?
Well, this is something that I just really want to credit Aaron with, and there's a great paper in OJSM, and they published in 2020, and I'd encourage our listeners, look at this paper, because it really is really critical to understanding, I think, the pathology of root tears. And what Aaron had, and probably the only place you could ever do this was at the Mayo Clinic, but he actually had 27 knees. It was 26 patients, but there were 27 knees where he had MRI studies before and after root tears. And Justin, was super interesting. What he found is that before these patients tore the root on MRI, they had approximately 3 millimeters or so of extrusion. And then when they tore the root, the extrusion went up to like 5.5 millimeters. So he documented that the extrusion was present before the root was torn on these MRIs, which is really important. And the time frame to tear the root completely was about a year and a half. But what he showed, and what I think is true, is that the essential lesion is the meniscal tibial ligament deteriorates, I think, as we get older, just tends to stretch. And so you think about that, when the meniscal tibial ligament is starting to stretch out, the meniscus starts to extrude a little bit. And then because, you know, the anchor point for the meniscus is, you know, the root area, especially posteriorly, over time, there's stress on the root. And then it extrudes enough to where all of a sudden, you know, the patients, as we know, tell us, hey, I was getting out of the car, I squatted down, I felt this pop, had posterior knee pain, and then the root gives. So I think the really pathophysiology here is that it is gradually extruding, and then it just gets to that point where there's so much stress on the root fails. So I think, to me, the meniscal tibial laxity and stretch that I think happens as part of the aging process, probably it plays a huge role. Now, we know some root tears can be acute, for sure, especially on the lateral side with ACL surgery, and the medial side as well. You can have an acute tear, a little bit different method there. But I think for the majority of the root tears that we see in clinical practice in our older patients, I think that meniscal tibial stretching, as Aaron really showed elegantly with this MRI study pre and post tears, is super important.
Yeah, it's a really nice study. And I know it's a little off topic, but since you brought up the meniscal tibial ligament, you know, I've come across, and I'm sure you're well aware of, maybe you've tried some of these techniques that people describe where you tenodesce that area to maybe improve extrusion. Have you had much experience and done studies and looked at that rather than the centralization? What are your thoughts about those techniques?
Yeah. At meniscal tibial ligament superport, we published a study on the importance of the meniscal tibial ligament acting just like a peripheral meniscal tear for joint stability with anterior translation. We published that a few years ago. That's more of an instability issue with the meniscal tibial ligament. You know, but the work that, you know, Pletter published about, you know, suturing to the, you know, to the proximal tibia, the concern I have with that is that, you know, potentially you're kind of anchoring the meniscus in the position where it may already be extruded. You know, I think you have to pull the meniscus into the joint to correct the extrusion, as opposed to maybe just fixing it on just the meniscal tibial ligament, because I think the extrusion has already happened at that point. So, I mean, you know, if you got to a very early case, I think for fixing the meniscal tibial ligament before the root tore, you could do that on the outside. But I really think we need to have something on the inside. You know, we have to pull it into the joint. So for me, it makes more sense to think about the centralization concept of trying to pull that meniscus back in, because it's already been subluxed. So I just worry that maybe if it's already extruded 3 to 4 or 5 millimeters and you're doing something on the proximal tibia, that you actually might be tethering it in that position a bit more.
Yeah, I agree. That makes sense. You have to reduce it back to the more anatomic position. That makes a lot of sense.
Right.
One thing that I really struggle with, especially in Pittsburgh with heavier patients or indications for repair and centralization, it's a long topic a lot of times, and patients, you know, don't want to be non-weight bearing, and what if it doesn't heal? Tell us a little bit about your indications, and do you have a BMI cutoff, and how much arthritis is too much, and your considerations of alignment, and just how you approach these patients when you see them in the office?
It's a great question. So, you know, it's really multifactorial. I think, you know, these patients present to us, I think it's important to note that they come in with pain, right? So they have pain, and typically it's this posterior knee pain. It's not the classic, you know, medial joint pain of, say, of a traditional tear of the posterior horn of the meniscus. It's this posterior discomfort, bothers them in knee flexion activities. But many of our patients, you know, are a bit overweight, especially here in central Missouri. We have a little bit of an issue with BMI here. But, you know, I think we have to look at all the factors. So for me, first thing is I'm going to do is I want to assess them clinically and get obviously good standing radiographs. And, you know, I think it's critical to have an AP and a PA, Rosenberg standing, comparing both knees side to side. And then for sure, hip to ankle alignment films in everybody. To see what their alignment is and to look for varus and help that in your decision-making process. And then, you know, we'll get an MRI for sure, because I want to look at not just at the extrusion on the MRI, you know, greater than 3 millimeters, Justin's kind of our cutoff when we start thinking it's pathologic, but I also want to look at the articular cartilage, and I want to look at, you know, bone edema. Commonly we see these bone marrow lesions with the root tears due to overload on the medial compartment. So you want to look at that. You want to look at the state of the articular cartilage. Because, you know, on some of the MRIs, you'll see if it's, you know, if they've got grade 4 lesions, full thickness defects, I think we're too late to do the repair. So then the question you ask is a critical one, is alignment. You know, for me, we've been, and Aaron and I published our data on this. We did a clinical study that we published a couple of years ago on our root repairs, transtibial only, not with centralization. And we showed that alignment really did not affect our results up to 5 degrees of varus. And in the literature, 5 degrees is kind of the cutoff to maybe consider an osteotomy. But there really hasn't, you know, been a study that has looked at, you know, doing an osteotomy versus, you know, a root repair with or without an osteotomy. Meaning, you know, in some of these patients, if you do an osteotomy and root repair, you maybe just need to do the osteotomy and not the root repair. So, I mean, it, you know, it becomes an issue of a pretty big surgery. So for me, if I have a, you know, middle-aged ladies, 55 years old and a bit heavy and maybe has some diabetes, a little comorbidity, I'm not going to do a tibial osteotomy on that patient, just for the risk of complications and non-union or infection or affecting a later knee replacement just outweigh that risk for me. So then the question of a root repair comes in. I may do it if they're less than 5 degrees of varus and cartilage looks decent on the MRI. I think it's reasonable to try and buy in some time to fix the root in that setting and not do the osteotomy. So The answer is I have done some root repairs with osteotomy in the younger cohorts, but the typical patient I'm seeing in the office with the root tears, I'm not really doing the osteotomy on. I just think it's just probably a little too much to ask for that patient to go through. And then I think the other thing that's critical for me is I talk to the patients. If I'm considering root repair, gone through everything, I think they're a potential candidate based on their alignment films, not too much varus, based on their MRI, don't see major cartilage damage. I'm going to ask them a question is, can you be non-weight bearing? I think it's really important postoperatively that these patients are non-weight bearing, probably, 4 to 6 weeks. And that's a struggle for some people, and I'd rather have that answer in the office if they just look at me or I look at them and I know they're not going to be able to use a walker or crutches and be protected weight bearing for 4 or 6 weeks. I'm not going to do the procedure because it's going to fail. I think you can't immediately weight bear these patients. There's just too much force transmitted across the root to allow that to necessarily work in my hands. And I, even perhaps with a centralization, I'm not sure that we can allow that weight bearing. So I think that's another critical factor for me, decision-making to proceed with a patient. And again, I have that frank discussion with them. And I say, no problem. We'll just put you maybe in an unloader brace and see how you do. And then maybe send you to my partners that are doing knee replacement later on. So I think all those factors, it's kind of a long answer to your question, but those are all things I'm thinking about when it comes to my ultimate decision to recommend a root repair for a patient.
Yeah, those are great pearls. Like I said, I find it really difficult. And a few follow-up questions about that. I was curious, how did you guys pick 3 degrees of, three millimeters of extrusion? And then also, how do you approach BMI? Do you say if they're over 40 or 35, no way, it's too high of a risk, or in the right patient, if they're able to be non-weight bearing, will you do it for them? It's difficult. I see a lot of patients like that in my practice.
Yeah, I think, 3 millimeters was kind of based on the literature that we felt was appropriate for the determination of extrusion. And again, that's based, obviously on a coronal MRI study. And we might talk a bit later about one issue that you need to think about, too, is not only is there extrusion in the coronal plane, but there's meniscal extrusion, I believe, in the sagittal plane that we don't really talk about that much. But the 3 millimeters, basically, that's our standard definition based on the literature for what we would consider pathologic extrusion in the coronal MRI. So, BMI, we showed in our clinical study, we published this clinical study where we looked at our outcomes in our patients at a 2-year follow-up. And we published this in OJSM a couple of years ago. Really, if I can talk just a bit about this study, because it was really super important for us. So, what we were interested in is 2 things. We're interested in is regular transtibial root repair. What were our outcomes, number one, with patient reported outcomes? Then the second thing was, what was our outcomes with MRI? So if you really want to know how you're doing, you need to not only ask your patients to get the PROs, but you need to have some objective assessment of your procedure, right? We're not really going back with second look scopes. So MRI is obviously a very good way to ascertain the extrusion question because they have it pre-op and, they have it post-op. So we actually had 45 patients in this study, and it was pretty interesting, Justin, that our patients loved us. At 2 years, our outcome data was great. The patients were better. They were happy. Our PROs all improved. The patients were pleased. And so when we looked at our MRI data, we combined my data and Aaron's data at the Mayo Clinic, and the two radiologists reviewed the MRIs, and we found that 98% of the root repairs were healed, which was good. However, our extrusion, which was approximately, increased approximately 2 millimeters from where we started to 6 months post-op. So on the post-op MRI at 6 months, we had a bit more extrusion. It wasn't statistically significant, but it was higher. So then we said, okay, well, we're helping the patient, yes, but we haven't corrected the extrusion, so are we really helping the patient? Because we know extrusion is going to lead to probably later progressive OA. So to drive this point home a bit further, and then I had this thought that, well, what if we did an immediate MRI? So I thought, okay, you get out of the operating room, you fix the root, and you and your fellow are high-fiving, it's great repair, everybody's happy. I said, what does that look like? So we were able to get some additional funding, and we looked at 10 patients that had a medial meniscus root repair, and within 10 days, they had been non-weight bearing, in a brace, haven't moved their knee, haven't weight bared. We did a follow-up MRI at 10 days from their surgery. Guess what we found out, Justin? They actually had a bit more extrusion than they had when we started. 10 days out. So it was really kind of that data, you know, I think it's just important. You know, you gotta have science here in what we do. And you know, at that point, I think Aaron and I have a lot of experience with root repair. I think we do a pretty decent job, but it was pretty humbling to find out that your great root repair really did not do anything for the extrusion in an immediate MRI setting. So, you know, this is all background to centralization, right? So, you know, you have to separate, you know, what you're really is happening with your patient outcomes are important for sure. That's why you're operating to try to help people. But in this particular case, I don't think the patient outcomes, at even though they're good at 2 years, and other studies have shown this as well, clinical outcomes are good after root repair because you fix the root tear. And I think that's a pain generator for the patient. So they feel better, yes, but we haven't corrected the extrusion. And multiple studies have shown over time, and some systematic reviews recently published, that root repair still leads to later OA. Why? Because they're still extruded. And I think that's what Aaron and I have shown, that when you do a standard transtibial root repair, well done, you still have extrusion. So again, the issue is, yes, you've helped your patients in the short term, but I'm not sure that long term we've really solved the problem for them, and they're still going to progress, and a high number of them are still going to go on and progress with OA despite a successful root repair. So that's the whole issue, which really was the genesis for trying to figure out, could we do better with centralization?
Yeah, that's a great study. And, you know, being able to get funding for those MRIs right away, I haven't seen studies done like that too often. It's a great thought. Before we jump to more of the centralization, I just did want to ask you about the extrusion in the sagittal plane and your thoughts regarding that. Something we really don't talk much about, and you brought it up. So I was curious if you could tell us your thoughts about that.
Yeah, I think that I think it really does make a big difference. You know, we have a recent publication that we just submitted, a biomechanical study where we created a root tear with meniscal tibial injury. And what we showed in our study that we had extrusion both in the coronal and in the posterior and the sagittal plane, especially posteriorly. And, you know, that especially happens, there's more loading on the posterior horn in flexion at 90 degrees of flexion. We tested these specimens at 0-90 degrees of flexion. And I think that for us, it's just we haven't really recognized that as much as we should probably in terms of looking at this as closely on an MRI. But it was interesting in this biomechanical study where we could actually, you know, see our data and we measured the amount of extrusion, and we could see that it was also going posteriorly in the sagittal plane. So I think that's an area that we have to investigate further biomechanically. And I'm not necessarily advocating that you fix the root necessarily more centrally. I think it's super important for me, Justin, that I still fix the root anatomically. I'm not trying to necessarily correct sagittal posterior sagittal excursion by pulling the root more centrally in a non-anatomic location. I don't do that. I put it back where it goes. But that's where I think the centralization helps us, because as you've seen in this in our paper, one of our anchors is kind of in that posterior third location of the medial meniscus. So I think that anchor is the one that helps us get it reduced. And we showed in our biomechanical paper that we were able to successfully correct the extrusion by placing two anchors. But one, I think the critical one is that posterior third one. Then we place another one in the middle third of the meniscus. So I think the extrusion posteriorly is important, but I think that's where the centralization can really help us. But I really want to make a point to our listeners. I don't put the meniscus root back non-anatomically. I put it back where it goes. Usually you can see that stump there. I want to put my guide right there. And so I think it's really important that you put it where it goes and not try to necessarily over-centralize it with your posterior standard root repair anchor. Again, different than centralization. I think that's where I'm trying to correct more of that sagittal excursion. But I think it's important that you don't put the root back in a non-anatomical position with your root repair technique.
Those are great pearls. You know, to jump into the heart of this that everyone wants to hear about, just tell us a little bit about your centralization technique, maybe some previous iterations and how you got to your current technique, and tell us about those pearls. You know, you were mentioning about the different location of the anchors. It'd be great to hear.
Yeah, cool. Thanks. I think a lot of us that do knee surgery are also shoulder surgeons. So for me, you know, it's kind of a really fairly easy transition as I thought about this. And it took a while to figure this out. And you know, I'd spent a lot of time in the lab. And I think that's important when you're doing new techniques before you bring it to your patients. You know, we really tried to get this figured out. And so really what I was able to kind of conceive is the concept of this meniscal tibial injury would be very similar to like an anterior instability in the shoulder, right? So, you know, the labral repair concept of where you're actually trying to tighten the ligamentous structures of the shoulder to stabilize the shoulder, not just the labrum. So this idea of, you know, taking up the laxity here in the meniscal tibial ligament for the centralization. So for me, I chose to utilize a knotless anchor system up on the medial tibial plateau, with the idea being that I could pass the knotless sutures through the meniscus and reduce it that way. So when we first started doing this, you know, it's fairly straightforward. You have your standard medial and lateral portals, and I make a high AM portal just with a spinal needle. It's actually very easy to do just off the patella. And you come down at that angle, and that's going to be your angle for placement of your drill guide for your centralization anchors. So what I do is I place the anchor first, and then the question is how you place your sutures. So the anchor that I use has two sutures attached to it to create a knotless mechanism. And what I did initially was, as I looked at making a vertical mattress suture through the meniscus, so that would involve, you know, passing one suture fairly peripherally through the meniscus and then passing the next suture kind of in the mid body. And Aaron looked at it. He was looking at a horizontal mattress configuration with the knotless mechanism. But the concern I had with that is, you know, our circumferential hoop fibers run longitudinally. So I thought maybe if we could figure out a good way to do it with a vertical mattress, we would have a better pullout within the meniscus. So it's we've got one of our other publications kind of go through in detail. But essentially what I'm doing is I'm making my first pass with the knotless mechanism fairly peripherally in the meniscus, trying to capture toward the capsule. My next pass, what I do is I actually use a loop suture and I pass a loop through the mid portion of the meniscus. And then I use that loop to just shuttle the first suture back through the loop, and that creates a vertical mattress. And then I create the knotless mechanism with the other suture. So I think that's been really helpful for me. And so of all the ones I've done, I've actually never had a suture pull out of the meniscus. And, you know, we tense these anchors pretty significantly like we do in the shoulder. And I think because we're capturing those circumferential hoop fibers with a vertical mattress configuration, I think that's better than a horizontal mattress for that reason. So then the idea is to try to, you know, figure out where you put the anchors. Again, Justin, to be honest with you, you know, we don't have this all scientifically worked out. You know, you don't want to over, you know, centralize them. So we're basically, I try to put the first anchor at about the junction of the posterior one third, middle two thirds, just on the edge of the meniscus there, on the plateau, and then pass the sutures, as I said, in a vertical mattress fashion there. And I put my next anchor at about the equator at the mid portion of the MCL on the edge of the meniscus there, pass them. And then what I like to do, the sequencing, always people have asked, you know, how do we do it sequencing? Do you fix the root first or do the centralization sutures first? What I typically do is I'll place the root sutures, I'll place my anchors, I'll place my two vertical mattress sutures with my two knotless mechanisms. And then I'll kind of hold the root reduced, but not totally fixed yet. And then I'll fix the two centralizations first. And then I'll complete it with the root. But I try to maintain tension on the root while I'm fixing the centralization so that the meniscus stays reduced posteriorly as well as with the centralization. So, you know, how far are we advancing it? I mean, you know, we're working on more MRI data, but you can see in this paper, we did have a couple MRIs where we did show that we're seeing less extrusion. It's not perfect with centralization, but we're definitely seeing less extrusion than we did with the standard transtibial repair without centralization. Again, we're collecting more MRI data to be sure, but so far it looks like we're doing a better job with the centralization on postoperative MRIs. You know, again, it's not perfect, but if we can get into that 1 millimeter extrusion range down from, you know, 4 to 5, I think we're justifying use of the centralization technique to try and again minimize extrusion. So the whole goal here is if we can get that meniscus pulled into the joint, will that give us hopefully less extrusion and translate into less, you know, OA progression? But again, you know, we're working on it, but this is where we are at this point. I think we have a good suture configuration. You know, putting the anchors in the plateau, you know, it's maybe not ideal, but you know, most of these patients already have some chondral damage, you know, at least grade two change. In my experience, most patients have grade two ICRS changes on the femur and tibia. I don't think it's a big problem putting the anchor in the plateau. They don't pull out. That plateau bone is very hard. So when the anchors kind of go underneath the cortical bone there, they don't pull out. I've never had the anchors pull out. I've never had the sutures pull out. So I think it's a pretty secure construct. Then I think the other thought that I always think about is it going to heal there, right? Even if you pull it in, what's going to get it to heal? So I think one of the critical point that maybe didn't get quite mentioned in the article, but I'd like to make the point here with talking to you, is that I take a curette and I debride the peripheral margin of the medial plateau. I take away the cartilage just off the peripheral edge from his front, as far front as I can go to the back. So I try to create some blood flow and some degree of hopefully stimulation of some healing response, because I'm not sure that if you just centralize the meniscus onto the plateau, how's it going to stay there? How's it going to heal? You know, will over time with weight bearing, even after 6 weeks, will the loading be such that the anchors, you know, aren't going to hold just because there's no biology there? So for me, I figure they've already got damage to the plateau. I'm going to abrade it underneath the meniscus. So hopefully I'm not creating more chondral damage, but I am a bit. But I'm just trying to get some blood flow off the subchondral bone and expose that bone. Try to get some healing to enhance the healing with just the centralization anchor. So I think that's important understanding. I need some biology there too. So that's one point that I would say in the technique that I want to make sure the listeners appreciate, that I do think you have to do something to try to get some blood flow to help that meniscus heal. You know, the anchors are there to hold it there, but we got to make sure it heals there.
Yeah, it's a good point. Something I always was questioning as well. One question about preparing that area. Do you use a curved elevator? And how aggressive do you get with that for the meniscotibial ligament? Yeah. Do you think that helps pull it in more?
Yeah, great point. We do that routinely. So we have that curved elevator from the shoulder sets, about a 70-degree curve. And I take it from the root down the plateau from posterior to as far anterior as I can get. And then that frees up the meniscal tibia a bit more to allow us again to pull that meniscus in. I think that's a huge point. Then after I do that, then I bring my curette in and debride as far as I can from posterior up to anterior on that edge of the plateau. But that's a really important point of the preparation. And then you place your two anchors that I mentioned, both knotless, and you have those two sutures. You know, we've used two routinely. I can tell you from just looking at some other stuff that we're, you know, thinking about other ways to centralize the meniscus, maybe even better. I think maybe a third anchor, a bit more anterior, is important. You know, we tend to really focus on the posterior horn as a centralization, you know, where we're seeing that excrusion in that sagittal plane, as we talked about, as well as coronal. But in some of the other work I've done in the lab, when we've placed a more anterior anchor, which is a little obviously tricky to do arthroscopically to get that vertical mantle suture, it's hard to do it. But in the lab setting, I think coming anteriorly does help the overall reduction of the meniscus onto the plateau. So, you know, more to come on that. We'll probably have to modify technique to get anteriorly, because it's very difficult to try and pass that suture. It's like impossible to get a vertical mattress in an arthroscopic technique right now with the instrumentation we have. But I think going forward, doing something also to the anterior horn in terms of centralization, I think is going to be something that I think we're going to hear more about as we work on this technique.
Yeah, great points. Appreciate you always pushing this forward. You know, I keep harping on all these details, but do you find it more helpful to use a curve guide or a straight guide, and any other tips for suture management? Do you put a cannula in the medial portal and you view from the lateral portal, or any other thoughts for people starting out with this technique?
Right. Yes. I appreciate it, because it's a little daunting when you look at it. And so I'm happy to go through this. You know, we talked about the preparation with the elevator, talked about abrading it. So when I do my high-end portal, I was first using the curve guide for the knotless anchors, but actually now I've gone to the straight guide because, you know, you can kind of lever your hand up. You try to be, you know, fairly perpendicular to the surface, and you drill usually twice, and then I put my anchor in and set it. And I think it's important that you do have some kind of a cannula, so you don't get any soft tissue bridges, which we know is in the shoulder, are so annoying and frustrating, even in the knee as well. So I think it is important to have a cannula that you pass through. And then I use a suture passing device for my knotless mechanism. And I just want to make one point that'll make life easier if you're going to do this centralization technique, that it's hard to pass. These Nautilus anchors have a repair suture, then there's a loop suture that creates the shuttle with the pull suture. So those are the three sutures that are in this traditional Nautilus anchor. So what I found is if you try to pass a repair suture with your passing device through the meniscus, it sometimes doesn't work very well and it frays it. It can kind of hurt that suture a little bit. So what I've done is I've gone to a technique where I use a link type suture that has a loop on one end and a free and it's free on the other end. And so what I'll do just to protect that repair suture, I'll actually just pass the link suture first through the peripheral aspect of the meniscus. And then I'll shuttle with the loop end of that. I'll shuttle then the repair suture through. And then I'll take that loop of that link suture, the looped end, put that into the knee passing device, and then pass that loop through the meniscus in the mid portion. So when you think about that, what that does for me, then I can just create my mattress very easily by passing a repair suture. It's all done through a cannula. But that way, the repair suture of the Nautilus anchor doesn't get abraded or weakened at all because you're just shuttling it with that special link suture. Once I figured that out, made life a lot easier. And then now I've got it shuttled through in a vertical mattress. I just pass repair sutures through the loop of the Nautilus mechanism and then do the pull suture and tighten it down about 80% of the way. And then I'll do the second one. So I think, yes, the answer is cannulas are important. But recognizing how I'm doing it, I'm not passing the actual repair suture with my knee passing device through the meniscus. I'm actually using a link suture to protect that repair suture. Because when I did it with just trying to pass a repair suture, I frayed the suture and it messed up the passage of the Nautilus mechanism. So I just made it simple and easy and used that link suture. And that's how I do it.
It's a great trick using the loop from the anchor too to pass it. So you're not doubling all your work. It's a great idea. So going back to the root itself, tell us some tricks about how you find to be the best way to repair the root. Are you using kind of a ripstop configuration, transtibial, and tell us how you like to do that part?
Well, when originally I did it, I was using two cinch sutures and usually passing two simple O cinch sutures like a luggage tag in the posterior horn. You have to be careful that you're in decent tissue. You know, you don't want to be too medial in the meniscus, but again, you got to be careful if you're too close to the root. A lot of these, you know, of course, these lesions are degenerative and your suture will pull out. And then you can start, you know, mincing up that posterior horn. So I try to get probably 3 to 4 millimeters for my first one and the next one next to that. And if there's room, I'll pass just another one as kind of a leader stitch to pull it into the transtibial location. But I think you have to be careful on the quality of the tear. So we actually published this back in 2017 and showed that this two luggage tags actually were good compared to a more complicated suture technique that Aaron had been doing. So, but recently we looked at this again and we have a biomechanical paper coming out soon in OJSM where we looked at, you know, that technique and two simple sutures, and we looked at a Mason Allen configuration more like a ripstop. And we actually found that the Mason Allen was the best. And so what I'm doing now is basically for the Mason Allen, I'm passing a horizontal mattress doing like the same way that I do with the centralization. I use that link suture again, so I don't mess the repair suture. I just pass the free end first and I pass the loop for that loop end next. And so then I take my first suture and create a horizontal mattress in the posterior root, and then I just pass a simple suture behind it or medial to it, so to speak, so you have like a T configuration so that you're pulling with the mattress suture to the root attachment site, and then over the top you have that vertical mattress. So it may sound like basically a ripstop type configuration, and we actually showed in this biomechanical paper that was the strongest configuration. So my configuration of choice as of today, Justin, again, progressing with the science, is to use that Mason Allen approach, a horizontal mattress, and then a vertical mattress, simple over the top.
Yeah, I love it. I've gone to kind of a ripstop configuration like that, too. It makes sense when the tissue is not so great. But the luggage tag certainly is quicker and easier. But yeah, one thing I wanted to ask you about a little bit further is the post-op restrictions. You know, you mentioned the non-wapering for 4 to 6 weeks. Like you said, it's hard, I think, for a lot of patients. Tell us about that and your return to activities. You put them in an unloader when they start walking, or any post-op suggestions you have?
Yes. I think that it's really important. I think the weight bearing issue is important. But since we're talking, I'll just give you a little interesting life lesson. My wife just had a meniscus root repair done 2 weeks ago, unfortunately, and such a struggle. I mean, for just getting around, trying to be toe touch or not weight bearing on crutches, getting around the house. It's watching that as somebody close to you goes through this. It's not very easy. You know, we do the surgery, we tell them, yeah, stay on your crutches for 6 weeks and we'll see you back and check how you're doing. Well, living with this root repair with my wife right now, it's pretty interesting. It's a lot of work to do that. So I think that recognizing that makes me more appreciative of this, that we hopefully will develop something that's stronger. And I think there's a potential with a new device out that may make weight bearing a little bit less necessary. In other words, not weight bearing less necessary. So hopefully we can make it easier for our patients, because it's a really difficult for people to be non-weight bearing or protected weight bearing for 4 to 6 weeks. But I think that you have to. So for right now, until we know that maybe we have a better construct, does centralization allow us to weight bear? We just don't know, Justin. I mean, we just don't have the data. So right now, Aaron and I are still going kind of that 4 to 6 weeks protected weight bearing on our patients. I do use a medial unloader brace once they start weight bearing for two reasons. One, most all these patients have early medial joint OA. And I think, we know from the literature that, unloader braces do work, probably give you about 3 degrees of correction in valgus. So I think that's important. And number two, just to help decrease stress on the repair. I haven't been so bold to, just go right away and weight bearing with an unloader brace. But we'll see. The way my wife's going right now, I might break the rules here and let her start weight bearing earlier just to improve her quality of life. But it's tough to be non-weight bearing following this procedure. So again, it's not something we necessarily see, because you're not really with your patients, but now I'm with one of my patients. So it's an eye-opening experience here.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't realize that. That's probably will change your perspective a little bit. That's an interesting circumstance.
Yeah.
I mean, getting to your study, and I've been picking your brain about all the work you've done just through the years and leading the way of this, but getting back to your study, tell us a little bit about your results. I know it was, 1 year, and you really had pretty good results.
Yeah, we did. I think it's important to recognize that, we had a mean follow-up of 2 years. Everybody had at least 1 year follow-up, and we really did have really, really pretty amazing results. Nobody really failed that we knew. Nobody went on to I think like a knee replacement, although it's early, but you got to follow your patients. I think 2 years is early. There's been a couple systematic reviews published. There was one that Brophy was the lead author out of St. Louis, and they showed it that at a 4 year follow-up that 50% of the patients with root repair, increased their Kellgren-Lawrence grade by one in that time frame. There was another study, I think it was Krivich, published a review a couple of years ago, I think it was last year, I think, but showed it 5 year follow-up, 22% of patients had significant progression of OA after root repair. So I think we need to take a little bit of grain of salt that our follow-up is short here. So it looks good now, but we're going to continue to follow these patients, obviously, and see where we're at 4 or 5 years to see if we do, in fact, have less OA. I mean, that's obviously the holy grail here. If we've corrected distrusion, are we going to see less OA? I just want to emphasize, this is short-term data. So, yes, we're encouraged, but, we're not pounding our chest yet. I think it's just too early for us to know for sure. But certainly in the short term, yeah, things look good. Our PROs are good. We just, really didn't seem to, have any problems with the technique. I think it's safe to do right now. So I think all that was good to be able to get the data out. But I just want to emphasize to our listeners that this is preliminary data. So by no means do I think we have it solved. We don't know. This was good to get this out to show that this is where we're heading. And we're going to follow these patients. So if we have our longer term follow-up in a couple of years and see if MRIs at that time and x-rays at that time still look as good as they did. But I think it's encouraging for a couple of reasons. One of the big things I want to point out is, every patient in the study had some varus preoperatively, about 3 degrees that we left. We didn't do any osteotomies. And most of the patients I see do have a bit of varus. So I think this was important to know that you can still do this procedure with some degree of varus without needing an osteotomy. So I think that was one of the good features of our outcome data here, that in our preoperative assessment, that the varus was not something you had to necessarily be overly concerned about. But again, I think it's just important to know that the short-term follow-up.
Yeah, obviously, like you mentioned, the goal would be to prevent knee replacements in the future. So I'll be excited to hear about this in years to come. And I'm sure you guys will be following these people for a long time. I just wanted to ask you, you know, you're always improving these techniques. That's why, like I said, every time I get the chance to see you, I want to see what's new. But tell us what you think is on the horizon and any other closing thoughts that you have or other studies that you have in the works that you could educate us about.
Well, I think I mentioned a bit earlier, we just submitted a paper on this technique. We studied it in a cadaver model. And let me just tell you, it's difficult to create meniscal extrusion in cadavers. You know, it's not that easy. But we were able to show in a model where we released the meniscal tibial ligament. We ended up similar to the technique, the other paper that's been published on this biomechanically in human bone was LaPraz group. And they did an osteotomy of the femoral condyle to really get at this open, not arthroscopic. So it's an open approach to the cadaver model where we did an osteotomy of the condyle. We could see the obvious meniscus, release the root, release the meniscal tibial ligament. And then what we did is we repaired the root and then we centralized it and we did in reverse order. And what we found in this study, again, that we just submitted for publication, that, you know, when we did our model with creating the root tear with release of the meniscal tibial ligament, we had extrusion. And when we fixed it with the centralization and the root repair, we corrected back to normal. So our technique did work, and it didn't matter whether you did the centralization first or the root repair first. The two together restored our biomechanical stability reduction of the meniscus to the intact state. So that was good to know. It didn't matter which way you went, but also importantly, we didn't over constrain on this model. So I think, you know, one of the fears is, you know, I think to say, okay, are you pulling this meniscus too far? You know, and we tried to duplicate our clinical position of the two anchors in this biomechanical study to what we do clinically. So, but we did not see any over constraint by doing the centralization. So I think that's really important clinically for the listeners to know. We feel fairly confident. We did this technique that's published in this paper exactly for this biomechanical study. So we wanted to justify what we were doing more scientifically. So we felt that it does reduce the extrusion in this biomechanical model back to the intact state, doing both the root repair and the centralization, but we did not overconstrain. Now, so that's important. And so I think that's good. That was good for us. But, you know, I'm not sure that the anchors on the plateau, you know, everybody, you know, may have some degree of concern. Is that a problem? Again, you'll see on the MRI, you'll see post-op MRIs, you'll kind of see a little cystic area there from the anchors. You know, even though they're a soft anchor, there is, you know, some obviously trauma to the subchondral bone from putting them there. So I think, you know, we're working now on some other techniques to try to figure out if we can, you know, pull the meniscus in a different way without necessarily putting anchors on the plateau. I think that's our next focus of study. We want to continue to follow this cohort that we've published on for sure, and see if this technique is going to make a difference in terms of more long-term outcomes with, again, less extrusion and less OA in the 4 to 5 month follow-up range. But I think we also know that we can do better. This really was our first approach of trying to centralize the meniscus. But, you know, if we can figure out a way to, you know, create more of a circumferential reduction of the meniscus onto the plateau, and that's kind of where we're working on now as the next step. But we don't have quite figured out yet, but we're working on it in the lab, and hopefully we'll have something more coming out in that in the future. But at least we feel fairly confident based on our biomechanical data that we've just submitted for publication in this clinical study that this technique does effectively centralize the meniscus. And we think that it is better for extrusion. Again, we need more MRIs, we need more long-term follow-up, but I just want to emphasize that, unfortunately, you know, a really successful root repair alone is not enough, in my opinion. And I think the data is out there that we can do better. We need to do better. You know, if you believe that extrusion leads to OA, and the literature would suggest that is the case, I think we have to think broader in terms of not just fixing the root, but correcting the extrusion and how best to do that. And again, both in the coronal and sagittal plane, it's complicated. So I just, you know, it would be nice if we could say, hey, the root repair is great because it's, you know, everybody, you know, can do it. It's a fairly straightforward procedure in and of itself, doing a straightforward root repair. But Justin, it's just, I don't think it's enough. And so, you know, I hope others that are listening kind of take the heart and go to the lab and you know, help us out. We got to figure it out better, because I think, you know, this is a real problem. They're very common. You know, root tears are very, very common. And I think the other point I'd like to make is, we talk about this, I also do centralization only. If I see a patient in the clinic that has and comes in with medial joint pain, no mechanical symptoms, so it doesn't seem like a traditional meniscus tear, have some posterior discomfort, pain with weight bearing, and you evaluate them, x-rays look good, and you get an MRI, and you see extrusion, but the root's intact, I take those patients to the operating room, and I centralize them. And the root's intact, I'll bring the meniscus in. So I'm catching them in that early phase that Aaron wrote about, where you're seeing extrusion before the root tears. So I've done several of those where I've gone in and put the anchors in up on the plateau and pulled the meniscus in. And, you know, we're going to hopefully try to follow a subgroup of those patients. So I think, you know, identifying early extrusion, I think you might save that joint, you know, because we do see those patients where they come in with extrusion without a root tear. And you say, oh, your root's okay, you know, you just do some PT or whatever. Well, no, maybe centralizing those patients is what you need to do. So I'll throw that out there as something that I have been doing as well, to try to keep these patients from tearing a root and having further extrusion. So I think centralization is a concept that is here to stay. Can it be done better? 100%, I'm sure, yes. And we're working on that, and hopefully others get on board and try to help us with this too.
That's a great point. You see these people with pain, that's a great thought. You know, why are we waiting for something to tear? They would be better off if you maybe fix them and prevent that, and prevent arthritis and a knee replacement. Really like to thank you, Pat. Every time I speak with you, I learn so much, and I've got my notes from our talk today, and appreciate all your education. Really applaud you for following the science, and you're following the data like you talked about, with, you know, changing your root technique and always trying to get better and leading the way and teaching us with Dr. Critch to really improve root repairs. And like you said, we have some ways to go, but wouldn't be here without you. So thank you again for your time and for all of your education for all of us.
Well, I appreciate it, Justin. And I need people like you to keep pushing us forward and helping us here. You know, there's a lot more to learn, and we all can get better, but I think we've got to get this extrusion problem somehow figured out as best we can, so that our patients have the best outcomes. And, you know, the goal here is to preserve the meniscus, right? I mean, arthroplasty does well, but still, I think if we can prolong the need for that and do something arthroscopically in our patients to really correct this problem definitively, I think it would be a great step forward in dealing with a condition that's quite prevalent.
Yeah, that's for sure. And patients prefer the minimally invasive technique. So,
yeah, I think that's where we need to go. That's always what we've done in our arthroscopic approaches to everything. And so I think this is just another step. And we're just in the early phases, and really hope that you and others, you know, get on board too, and you know, help us out in terms of new ideas and new approaches. And we just got to research it and make it better for our patients.
Yeah, that's for sure. Thanks again so much for all your insight and for joining us today. Dr. Smith's article titled "Satisfactory Clinical Outcome, Complications, and Provisional Results of Meniscus Centralization with Medial Meniscus Root Repair for the Extruded Medial Meniscus at 2-Year Minimal Follow-Up" is in press in the Arthroscopy Journal and is available online at arthroscopyjournal.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
The views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent the views of the Arthroscopy Association or the Arthroscopy Journal. Thank you for listening. Please join us again next time.